What has been your past involvement with either? It's a little difficult to understand. It says, Varnashram Education Questionnaire. And then it's dealing with Varnashram and education as two different topics, whereas if it's a Varnashram Education Questionnaire, then it should be one topic, education about Varnashrams. So it's a little difficult to understand there. Yeah. But it says here either of these topics, so it's talking about two topics. Past involvement with either of these topics. Well, education, that's the specific reason for accepting sannyas, is to officially act as an educator, as an instructor. Of course, what is meant here by education? Sannyas is meant for giving instruction by practice and precept. You know what this means, practice and precept? You all understand that? Precept means by telling, you do this. And practice means to personally do it and teach by personal example. So there's a saying in English, practice is better than precept. Better than telling someone do this is to yourself do it and set the example. Apane Acharya Prabhu Jivere Shikhan. It's stated about Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. That by his personal example he taught. So past involvement with education means one who takes sannyas is especially within the line coming from Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, that's especially meant for preaching. So actually our whole life is meant for education. Generally when we speak, when we think of education, we think in terms of formal education. Just like you are students at the Srimad Bhagavatam Vidyapit. So this is considered the period of education. Or going to school, this is considered education. But real education directs a person to become educated at every moment. Education is not restricted to the classroom. And nor is it restricted to a certain period of life. Of course, there is a period of life in Vedic culture and in any civilization which is meant, specifically meant for learning. That's the beginning of life. But not the, from childhood. Kumara Acharya Pragyo Dharman Bhagavatanya. From the young age, one should start to learn. Not immediately from birth. Although it's said that the first guru is the mother, so she teaches in some way, preliminary. That's why I often say that gurus aren't meant for teaching. Traditionally they don't teach things like don't put your hand in your mouth except when you're eating or brushing your teeth. Don't yawn without covering your face. The mother teaches all these things. But in the modern age, neither mothers nor gurus teach. They don't know. So education. What's my involvement with education? Total. But not officially in the manner that an education is generally thought of. Well, I am definitely aware of the need for real education. and am concerned with that, which is why I've sent or encouraged several of my disciples to come here, which is this place is meant for real education, isn't it? What's that Prabhupada used to call it? Vidya Bhagavat Avat. The limit of education is Srimad Bhagavat. Where's that from? Where's that quote from? Prabhupada used to quote that sometime. I've seen that in Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur's writings. Any of you know where that's from? No? You could find that out, saying this is Srimad Bhagavat Vidyapit. You've heard that saying? Didn't hear that before? You can look it up in the, you have it there, your folio. You looked it up?
What's it?
Vidya Bhagavata Avati. Avati means? So where's that quote from? You can, it's another point of research. That's point number 50 zillion and one. Something else to research. Yeah, anyway, we'll speak more about that then. Then with Varnashram also, my involvement, past involvement, what is your past involvement? What is your present involvement? Have you given seminars, talks in collection? What is your present interest and involvement with these topics? With Varnashram, yeah, I'm very much aware of the need for that. I've spoken many times about this formally and informally, that my perception of the need for establishing Varnashram communities as Srila Prabhupada had envisaged, land-based Varnashram communities, is such that I feel that many of the problems that we are facing in ISKCON today, and we all know that ISKCON is facing various problems on various levels, are due to not having taken up the 50%, which Srila Prabhupada said. 50% of his work, which he had not done, which is establishing Varnashram. Now if we consider what Prabhupada did, which is impossible, it was so impossible that no one even dreamed of it. Markine Bhagavad Dharma, Krishna Consciousness in America. Prabhupada did it. He established Krishna Consciousness in the Western countries. And then the other part of making Varnashram communities, it's such a big thing. But this completes the revolution. Without this, then we must fall back on the old culture. Just like I'm discussing in the last few days with Kishore Prabhu about his future. What to do? Now he's a married man. Generally one finishes student life and then gets married, but it's a mixed up society then. It's a society without any clear structure or shape or direction. This individualism means that there's no shelter or guidance. In a structured society, the education, the blacksmith's son is taught how to be a blacksmith. He has his social position. He doesn't have to cut a profile or follow the latest fashions. His position is fixed. That's his education. He learns how to make horseshoes, for instance. That's what a blacksmith does. It's required in a society where there are horses. That's called a farrier. Probably most English-speaking people don't know that word anymore. You ever heard that word? Farrier means someone who puts horseshoes on a horse. It was required. It's not everyone can do it. You like to try putting horseshoes on a horse? Horse. If you know how to do it, you're not going to be able to do it because it hurts the horse. to bang nails into his foot. So there's the individuality in modern society is such that no one knows what they're doing, why they're doing, where they're going, what the purpose of life is, and everybody's crazy, more or less. The whole society is insane. So the necessity of our national society. Yeah, I was talking with Kishore, so I was saying that, now what's he going to do? Now, wife means ato griha kshetra sutapta vitaya. All these things are required. Stri, vistara, expansion. Once you get a wife, then griha is required. Land, children in this social life, and vitta, money, all these things are required. So how to get, then we're discussing. And well, you could always become a lawyer, I get trained as a lawyer. But then that means asatsanga. The very basic principle of Krishna consciousness is that asatsangatya ve vaishnavacha, giving up bad association. But due to lack of any other economic alternative, devotees are forced to associate with non-devotees, and then they lose their Krishna consciousness. And worse, maybe, they retain some level of Krishna consciousness, but they want to practice it on a template of modern humanistic thinking. It doesn't fit, it doesn't work. Krishna consciousness works on the basis of Guru, Sadhu and Shastra. But by association, we accept, and this is where education comes in again, we accept ideas from people who do not know that there is any goal of life, let alone the means to attain it. And they think that the goal of life is eat, sleep, drink and be merry, for tomorrow we shall all be dead. And religion is just the opposite. They don't have any idea. Dharma se hi atmavargasya narto kaya prakalpate. What is the next line? I always forget. Nartasya dharma ikantasya kama labhaya visvataha. Dharma, artha, kama, moksha. Generally people think dharma, one follows dharma and then one's desires will be fulfilled. By following dharma, I will get artha, kama and moksha. But dharma is not meant for fulfilling material desires. One should desire to live simply for inquiring into the absolute truth, not simply for acquiring money. So bad association. So these Varnashram communities are required for several reasons. One reason is so that we can practice Krishna consciousness in the association of devotees, have our own communities, our own culture, where we can live according to our own ideals. Our ideals means those given by Guru, Sadhu and Shastra. If we don't do that, then we are forced to live to some, at least to some extent, according to the ideals of non-devotees. And like I say, many of the ills of ISKCON, I perceive that we haven't done. So whatever is my involvement, well, you could say concern, I'm speaking about it, and at least some people have, some devotees have based their life, or they've taken this up as the mission of their life, or they've accepted the standards I've told them and live their life according to that. At least one devotee went to the land, that means outside Ahmedabad in Gujarat, while Srila Prabhupada was present. One gentleman from Bombay donated a large tract of land which Srila Prabhupada said to develop as a national community, which hadn't been done. So now one devotee who says that he's inspired by my speaking about it has gone to try to develop that. In family life also, I regularly preach about the principles of family life. There is concern about this in the Western, in America. There's North American Grihastha Ministry or something like this, and they're concerned with the high rate of divorce in ISKCON. But I'm afraid that their approach, again we're talking about education, their approach is, although it is maybe well-intentioned, it's going to, in the long run, it's just going to compound the problem, because they discuss in terms of modern society's standards and expectations for family life. It's based on, well, how the husband and wife, they put more emphasis on how they can, it's based on modern psychology, in short, rather than being based on the dharma prescribed by shastra and tradition. That you're married and now you just have to stay together, like it or not like it. Adjustment, one major adjustment which mostly people don't want to talk about nowadays is that, which Srila Prabhupada spoke of so many times, is that the wife should be submissive to the husband. The husband should be a first-class devotee. And they say, well, if the husband's not like Ram, I'm not going to be like Sita. That's the usual excuse. But the husband is never like Ram, but still it's the wife's duty to attempt to be like Sita. She, even if he doesn't follow his dharma, it's the wife's duty to follow hers. But instead of talking about duty, they talk about mutual compatibility. Basically, men and women are not mutually compatible anyway. They say, they get the astrological matching and they say 70% compatible. But there's practically men and women, they're not very compatible. So when we say compatibility, it's all relative. So more important than trying to make some psychological adjustment, which will never work, it's based on a dream that they lived happily ever after. You read the fairy stories. They were married and then they lived happily ever after. It's a fairy story. No one lives happily ever after. So by bringing in this modern psychology, they're trying to make it so that people, husband and wife, are adjusted according to the adjustment which is dreamed of by people who don't have knowledge of the actual nature of human nature. So in this way they're contributing to the problem. Better to live according to dharma. It is possible under all circumstances. The sense of dharma, education, what is education? What did Prahlad say when Hiranyakashipu asked him? What's the answer? What's the best education? Tamanye adhitam uttamam. What's the best? Shravanam, kirtanam, vishno smaranam, pada sevanam, Arjanam, Vandanam, Dasyam, Sakyam, Avanivedanam, Iti Pumsapita Vishnu, Pantischena Lakshana. Itya, what's the next line? Sorry. Pantischena Lakshana. Then I lost the third line. Tamvanya Adhita Muttama. This is the best education. So that's the best education. For living in this material world, there is the sense of dharma. Now, this is talking about Varnashram. There's a major mistake which is made in our movement. It's the same mistake the Sahajiyas make, and it's been adopted by many devotees in our movement, thinking that because Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said about Varnashram, Eho Bhajya, this is external, that we have no use for Varnashram. It's the same thing the Sahajiya said. Bhaktivinoda Thakur wanted to be, he wanted to establish the importance of Varnashram in Vaishnava society, because although Varnashram is external to the need of the soul, it is required for the conditioned soul. Varnashram dharma gives system and specific rules for living in this world, so that one does not live as an animal. Regulated life. Regulated life is required for spiritual advancement. There's the regulation of sadhana bhakti. And this sadhana bhakti of the sadhaka, there are many rules which are not mentioned in Rupa Goswami's Bhakti Angas, which are taken for granted. They're mentioned by Chaitanya Mahaprabhu in his teachings to Sanatana Goswami. Things like danta dhavana, brushing your teeth. So you may think, what's that got to do with bhakti? But all these activities are required. How to live in this world as a civilized person, civilized according to the Vedic understanding. That is required. It's not mentioned among the bhaktiyangas, but that is these basic activities, rising early, taking bath, the culture of respect for seniors, the sanctity of marriage, worship of the cows, the varnashram system, acting within varna and ashram. These are followed not only by Vaishnavas, but even by non-Vaishnavas. Mayavadis, Prabhupada said that up to the point of liberation, the philosophy is the same of Mayavadis and devotees. After that, there's a big difference. What is the nature of liberation? But the culture is the same. The understanding the Mayavadis have is wrong, but the culture is the same. So this way of living, if we live like that is favorable for practicing bhakti. If we don't live like that and we think, well, it doesn't matter, I can marry and divorce 5 times, we don't know even basic things like, you know, you see that devotees do all the basic things like they'll put their hands in their mouths and then they'll turn the pages of the Bhagavatam. So many basic things. I think probably in Indonesia, at least in the country, people follow all these things, is it?
Yes.
Still, probably. That the Indian culture is stronger there than it is in India. I can imagine. Although I've not been there. So we may think this is not like we'll just do bhakti. And all these things, that's all external. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said it's all external. But if we don't follow these basic things, one thing, there won't be any stability in society. Another thing is that bhakti, pure devotional service, is above vanashram, that's true, beyond vanashram, it's not below it. There's difference. Not following vanashram is for people who are above it and below it. So acting below it in the name of bhakti, that doesn't, by not following vanashram, that does not help one to become devoted. Rather, one should follow generic dharma. Everyone, we see, all Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he also, why did he take sannyas? And he observed, having taken sannyas, he observed the rules of sannyas very strictly. So, Bhaktivinoda Thakur, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, they wanted, of course, the Varnashram had become perverted in the caste system. So they wanted to establish what that is proper. So Vana, we need our own communities. We need our own education system. We need our own culture. Srila Prabhupada once said that his disciples, they were not afraid of Maya enough. Too complacent. Not afraid of. So we think we can just merge into modern society and still be devotees. And it doesn't matter. But it does matter. If we associate with a non-devotional society, then we pick up so many wrong ideas. We don't realize how sick and perverted modern society is. That's our fault. We don't realize that how, by cultivating calm, krodha, and lobha, which are the three gates to hell, the modern society is such a mess. Education, at the present time, within ISKCON, there's so much reverence for mundane education. But what is the result? Srila Prabhupada said that, not just Srila Prabhupada, but anyone can understand. Even 50 years ago in the Western world, it was understood that education is meant for producing character, people of character. It doesn't matter so much how much you learn or what is your character. Until recently, they used to teach Latin and Greek. And then people would read the Iliad and the Odyssey and all these things in the original Greek. And then they thought, and then Latin was there for reading the Bible and conducting church services in Latin. Now we may say that. And then they thought, what's the use? It's all, let's teach something useful, like biology, cutting up frogs. What's the use of this Latin and Greek? But the idea of teaching that is for imparting and teaching the classics. Of course, the Iliad and the Odyssey are really on the same level as Srimad Bhagavatam. But the idea was to impart character through education, by hearing about the character of what they consider to be great people. So the idea was there. So we may be enamored by modern education, but what is the result? As Srila Prabhupada pointed out, they're turning out cats and dogs. They're teaching in the schools how to be cats and dogs. The education means one should learn sense. The beginning of education is to learn sense control. But just the opposite. They're teaching how to have sex at a very young age. And the education is simply how to get a certificate so that you can get a job and earn money so that you can eat, sleep, mate, all these things, how you become a big animal. People become very proud, I've got this degree, so then I can... The modern education means how to become a Shudra. But in Vedic education means that education awards one social independence. Independence, the Brahmana is independent because by virtue of his knowledge, he doesn't care for any luxury. Anashakta anabhishvanga putradara griharadishu. That is aniketa stiramati. If he doesn't have a house, he's not disturbed. He's not attached to anything, so he doesn't need to run around. Kasmad bhajanti kavayo dhanadurvadam na. What does he need to go around flattering rich people? He's satisfied. Whatever comes, he can live. By virtue of realized knowledge, he's not a slave of money or rich people. He's got something better. That's the knowledge that gives detachment from this material world. But modern education, far from making us detached from this material world, makes us more and more and more greedy to enjoy without understanding there's no enjoyment here whatsoever. So what is the use of education which leads us completely in the wrong direction? So it is fascinating, yeah. I mean, in modern age it's called the information age. They've collected so much information on so many topics and are studying so many things. So it can be quite fascinating, the world of modern intellectualism. Srila Prabhupada wanted a book written called Intellectual Animalism. That for all their intellectualism, they don't know what the goal of life is. So therefore, they're living like animals. One devotee told me, who is that? I think it was Mahabuddhi. Told me that they when they first started this BBT library party for selling sets of Srila Prabhupada's books in the universities. First of all in America and later on throughout the world. So in the beginning they thought, well, this is quite exciting. We're going to meet all these scholars of Indology and sociology, and it's going to be different from distributing books on the street where it's just, hi, how are you, take a book, and we're going to be discussing with these highly educated and cultured people. But their actual experience was very disappointing. They found out that these professors, they're just all having sex with the students, with the young girls. And one of the biggest professors, one of the most famous names in Indology, he walked into his office, he was lying on his desk completely drunk at midday. So they may like to discuss, but they're licking the honey bottle on the outside. Mundane academicians means that they are sworn to irreverence, whereas real education teaches respect. Vidyada dati vinayam. Actually, it's supposed to. Education gives humility, but one cannot even begin to be educated unless there's humility. But from the beginning, in modern education, there's no humility, no respect. And in modern education, the principle is asatyam apratishtam. Nothing is fixed. There's no absolute knowledge. We're just examining everything. Krishna and Krishna consciousness is a subject of study. Just like some people study frogs, and some people study history, and some people study Vaishnavas and Vaishnavism and Krishna. They give their different theories. And they say, well, according to the Gaudiya Vaishnavas, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is an incarnation of Krishna. They can never write Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is na Chaitanya Krishna Jagati Paratattvam Paramiha. They can't accept this. They say, well, according to Rupa Goswami, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is the most munificent incarnation. He'll quote the Moha Mahavadanya. But it's all according to. It's not really a fact, but that's what Rupa Goswami says. They'll get a PhD for writing it down. So they are sworn to undecidedness, irreverence. They can never, it's part of the accommodations MO, modus operandi, that they can never, of course they may show some token respect, but ultimately their respect is like a kind of impersonal idea. Well, everything's kind of alright. Whatever your, all opinions are as good as any other. Multiculturalism is the modern fashion. So everything's, so if you like to believe in that, it's okay, but they can never fully respect, and they'll point out, their business is to point out flaws and discrepancies and contradictions. Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur made his magazine called The Harmonist. He spoke against harmony, the attempt to make harmony on the mundane platform. He said it's never possible. But real harmony means to be in line with Krishna's desires. And real harmony means that acharyas, they understand the underlying principles of Shastra and the apparent contradictions which are there, which the mundane scholars love to point out. They understand the underlying harmony, even between different acharyas who are supposed to be of the same sampradaya and they say different things. They understand the harmony because they understand the basic principles and they understand the purpose. So Vedic education means surrender to Guru. That's the beginning. Then you can begin to learn. And Guru, of course, he's supposed to be learned. He is nishnata. He's immersed in Shastric knowledge. But that knowledge, the whole concept in modern society is knowledge is something that you acquire. It's all very logical. You put everything, this in this category, this in that category. We may wonder why Srimad Bhagavatam, how can you learn about Srimad, how can you study Srimad Bhagavatam when it appears to be so unstructured? It discusses something here and there. If you want to learn about, for instance, how a disciple acts towards his guru from Srimad Bhagavatam, there's no guru bhakti, it's not like chapter 6, guru bhakti. But here and there you'll find Krishna goes in the forest with his friend Sudama. We find the effect of insulting Guru, when Indra, he disregards Brihaspati. We find a case of Guru being rejected, in the case of Bali Maharaj. We find Gurus listening to their disciples' explanations, in the case of Narada and Vyas, listening to Shukadeva. But it's not systematic. Why is that? Well, one reason is that Srimad Bhagavatam, it's not taught. It's not like a book where, in modern education, they increasingly think, what's the use of teachers? You can just read the books. Everything's systematically set out in books. Knowledge is something that it's a body of knowledge which is to be digested by the mental functions. But Vedic knowledge isn't like that. It's knowledge, it's to be understood through the intelligence, but through purified intelligence. That's why, again, sense control comes first. It's meant for character training, by which everything is revealed in the pure heart. That's why the mundane scholars, they may be more learned in Gaudiya Vaishnava philosophy than most of our devotees in ISKCON can ever hope to be. Some of them, they're very learned. But they never made any spiritual advancement because they never entered into the spirit of it. They never made the steps of surrender. So they don't actually understand anything. Their understanding is completely superficial. Whereas someone who is not even very learned, who hasn't been to Srimad Bhagavat Vidyapeeth, they may have so much realization and understanding and knowledge simply by hearing with a service attitude. They may not even know how to read and write. Without akshara gyan, they have complete akshara gyan. Can you understand this? Akshara means writing. A to ksha in the alphabet. What's that called? What's it called in English? Alphabet. Alphabet. First letter is A and last is Ksha. So Akshara Gyan means to know how to read and write. So without knowing how to read and write, one can have complete Akshara Gyan. Akshara means Krishna. He's A is the beginning and Sha is the end. So he's everything, beginning, middle and end. So you can have complete knowledge without even reading and writing, if one is blessed by Guru. That is the principle of Vedic education, completely different to modern education, where there's no relationship between the teacher and the student. The teacher takes payment. As soon as payment is involved, there cannot be any actual education. Then it becomes an exchange of money. The teacher teaches out of affection for the student, and out, just like one has to, in Karma Kanda, one has to repay his debts to the Pitris. By, how does one repay the debt to the Pitri? By having sons. Everyone has to get married and have sons. So there are different debts to be repaid. So one repays the debt to his guru for receiving knowledge by teaching others. It's a duty, it's dharma. If one has received knowledge, then it's his duty to teach others. So that is done without expectation of any mundane reward. And it's not that one has to, we hear the saying, make a living. How are you going to make a living? No one makes a living in Vedic culture. It is dharma rakshati rakshita. One performs one's dharma, and then by the system of dharma, one is maintained. So the brahmana teaches, and automatically he's maintained. That's all. Baba shaves, attends weddings, does his thing. No one pays him. Baba comes to your house, shaves, he's not paid. Washerman washes clothes, he's not paid. Never paid. The horseshoe is put on the horse. There's no payment. But the needs are covered. rice is given, clothing is given, and so on. So it's a very different, completely different understanding and concept. The whole basis of modern education is that life is meant for enjoying the senses. Everyone has to look after themselves. You have to make it a... teacher is a job. If you can't do anything well enough that you can get employed in it, then you teach it. That's the way it is. And he has no responsibility. Everyone's moving around all over the place. People don't stay in one place, so they never make strong relationships. The teacher is someone, once you leave school, finished. There's no more relationship. So I didn't even begin to start answering any of these questions. Well, I did. Without looking at them. So, complete change of outlook is required. It's a big job to establish this. The first thing that's required if we are to establish education is actual education on the Vedic basis, and there's many things to do. It's the the understanding, what is the purpose of education? Education is meant for self-realization. That's the ultimate goal. And there may be, like I was saying, education, blacksmiths. They don't need to go to... Prabhupada had many... He said many things which in traditional societies were just accepted as normal. In modern society, they're considered retrogressive. It means backward, moving backwards. That not, people think modern society, universal education, it's a good thing. But what is the value when you're turning out sub-animals? For all the education, the most popular on the internet, the most popular thing is pornography. So what is the use of such educating everyone? Means you're giving people, without raising their consciousness, you're giving them access to all kinds of degrading materials. Now one point of Varnashram society, which is rarely discussed, even in ISKCON, is that traditional Varnashram society was ruled by kings. So, where's the king? In modern society, we have at least some idea of what it means to be an intellectual. We have perverted intellectuals, and we have some idea of what it means to be a Vaishya. Although the idea of what it means to be a Vaishya, the modern businessman is very different from the pious Vaishya like Nanda Maharaj. And Shudras we have no, although they're impious Shudras, but we really don't have models of on any level of what it means to be a Kshatriya. The modern leaders, they don't resemble in any way Kshatriyas. I've heard some devotees say that Bush is a Kshatriya because he sends troops to Iraq. That's not a Kshatriya. That's on the level of the street gunda. Actually, the street gunda, he goes himself and fights. There's nothing brave about sitting in a conference and then deciding to send men to Iraq. Did he ever go there himself? I don't think so. I don't think so. Huh? He went a few times. I see, yeah. Different to the Vedic Kshatriya who leads from the front. kalam bhima virakshitam. Bhima is directly. Everyone can see he's protected by his strength. So they think he's a kshatriya. Kshatriya means who protects from wrong elements, but these modern leaders, they're supposed to protect cows. Instead, they're slaughtering them. They're supposed to oversee the structure of society by which women are protected. Instead, they think that this idea that women should have so-called equal opportunities with men, they think this is almost sacred. It's a principle of modernism that they should go out and mix up with all men and have abortions and not get married or get married and divorce 6-7 times. They have no idea what it means to protect women. They're encouraging them to live in a way that they must be exploited. So we don't have a model of that. I heard it said, many years ago I heard it said that, because India at that time had a woman prime minister, I heard it said, the Prophet said, that means there's no kshatriya in the whole of India, because they couldn't tolerate to be ruled by a woman. But this whole system of votes, it creates such, we can see in India, it creates such corruption in society. There's no real leader, people have no idea what it means to have a king who is worshipable. Still that tendency is there. The king of Orissa, though he has no authority of a king, but still the people of Orissa, they respect him. In Thailand also, the people, they respect the king so much. That tendency is there. Prabhupada said that still that tendency is there in India. The people, they want to have a king. That's why the only reason the Congress Party keeps on coming to power in India is because of the Nehru Gandhi dynasty. And until Sonia Gandhi stepped forward to be the chairperson of the Congress Party, it was considered to be finished. It just runs on the idea that it's a dynasty. I think most people think it's connected with Mahatma Gandhi, which isn't true. But Nehru, I think for the first 30 years from independence, I just got that article from the Congress Party was in power. Because the people think, well, then Nehru, and then after that came his daughter, and then after that came her son, and now it's the son's wife, and but somehow or other people relate to that, the dynastic system, even though they have no particular philosophy except avsarvad or suvidavad, opportunism. But people relate to that. This VP Singh, he was prime minister for some time. He was the Raja of somewhere, but he acted like such a clown that people couldn't respect him for that. Merapati Pagawai came in the newspaper. His wife had once testified in court that her husband was insane. VP Singh, the Prime Minister. Anyway, it's a big discussion. At least we should discuss so that we can start to put this. It's going to be very difficult to press our Krishna consciousness movement forward as long as we're trying to run it on the template of the Kam Krodh Lobh society. The two things don't mix. You can't have TV and potato crisps and modern education and Krishna consciousness. It doesn't work. The two things don't go together. It requires a different outlook on life and a different mode of life altogether. But we're very much stuck, having been raised in this materialistic, demoniac society, we're very much stuck in that mode of thinking. Srila Prabhupada spoke very strongly against modern society. And we can still do. And the problems in society are, they're compounded more than they are the inevitable course of society's demoniac endeavors is that it's becoming more and more complex and more degraded. But, in one sense, we can't speak, we're not really in a position to speak so strongly because ISKCON's 40 years old. Actually, it's 41 now, isn't it? So we haven't, in this time, we should have shown an alternative. So our failure, it's actually a failure to do so. Failure means it's not a complete failure. There's time to rectify. But it's really incumbent upon us to establish these communities by which we can show people that it is possible to live in a different way. We're not bound to live by the factory consumer civilization. It's not necessary. We don't have to live like that. People think that we have to live like that. Unless we work in a factory or some office, then how will we live? So it's up to us to show that. I've said all these things many times. I think those who are my disciples might be bored by hearing this, because I've said it many times. If we do make such communities, then many people will come, especially in the West, where many people, if they're looking for an alternative, actually, they know. In India, if we say this idea of progress, it's all rubbish, people, they don't know what you're talking about. Even our devotees, they think it's wonderful to get a good job and lots of money. But in the West, even non-devotees, if you say the society is sick, we need a different approach to life altogether. People know it. They may not be willing to listen to you even because they know it. They want to see, okay, what? Let's see it. If we show it, many people will be attracted to that. One devotee was telling me, I said this last time, a rainbow gathering in America. They have people who have attraction for what they call alternative living. They gather, and our devotees go there every year and they always bring new devotees back to the temple. So I was telling him that if we make these farm communities, we won't have to go out to these neo-hippies. They'll come to us. Prabhupada said people will join our farms in their millions. So, like I say, I've spoken on these things many times. I'll go on speaking about them. There's much more to be said. And ultimately, it's up to individuals to do it. You may ask, well, why don't I do it? Well, I am doing indirectly, in as much as I try to inspire people to do so. But why don't I just go and stay on a farm and live there? I could do, but considering the various services I have to do, that probably wouldn't be the most effective way to do it. Purusha Triswami in Brazil, he made some farm project, and he goes out and preaches also. And he says that people take it along. When you have something like that to show, an alternative way of living, then people take you much more seriously. What they call alternative living though, many times it's like they think how we can get alternative fuel to oil so that we don't depend upon these crazy Muslims as they think. Will be. So we should have some other kind of fuel. But they're still thinking of having the same way of life, but with alternative fuel. But Prabhupada's idea wasn't that at all. There was an artificial petrol crisis, approximately 1975. So Prabhupada said, what is the solution to the petrol crisis? Don't use petrol. And how do you go from one place to another? Prabhupada said, you walk, or if you need, you can have a bullock cart. What do you need to go? Why do you need to go from one side? People go, they go to a conference, they'll fly Bangalore to Delhi in the morning, attend the conference and go fly back in the evening. Why do you need to travel, you know, 3,000 kilometers in one day? What's the need? There's no need. You don't need to travel. That's the solution to the petrol crisis. Prabhupada was telling one of his disciples to write a book, How to Solve All the World's Problems. And he was giving, they were asking the economic problem. Prabhupada was saying that you don't need money. The economic problem is solved by money. If you don't have money, then you don't have an economic problem. You don't need money. You need roti kapra makan, as they say in Hindi. Food, clothing and shelter. So everything's there on the land, you don't need money. That's for people who have more complicated lives. The Vaishyas and Kshatriyas. Otherwise, Shudras and Brahmanas, they don't have money. Money means gold. There's gold and the possibility to cheat is lessened. This whole modern economy, it's all based on artificial principles. The inflation, the taxes, it's all artificial. In Burma, when it was still called Burma, there was so much money was being used for black money that overnight the government declared all the money invalid, all the bigger bills. And then they started having, instead of having 20 kshat as the currency in Burma, they made like 17 kshat notes. All funny numbers. So whatever, of course people in Burma, they never had the business. There's lots of money. There's lots of opium there, so there's lots of illegal business. Lots of minerals being smuggled out of the country. Gems. So that was their solution. In India too, some years ago, 20 years ago, there was I think it was 1,000 rupee note. You never saw them. They're only in black circulation. And the government declared that we're now going to take these out of circulation within 7 days or something. So people didn't know what to do because they couldn't just take them to the bank, all their black money, and so this way they caught them. He said, if you have these, you can take it to the bank and then you can exchange it for smaller notes. But you can't bring, like, you know, 1 crore of notes because it's undeclared wealth. So they were caught. So like this, producing paper money, it creates, and then inordinate taxes. We see in India, there's so much, the black or the undeclared economy is probably as big as the black economy. This paper money and inordinate taxes, it must create corruption. J- Just like if you want to sell a property, sell land, that's another bogus thing. Land should never be sold. But then the stamp duty is so high, the government requires so much that no one pays, legal on paper, no one pays more than half. Because that saves you paying so much money to the government. So to avoid the taxes, people deal in black money. The rest is paid in secretly. So all these economic problems and the whole unemployment, all these things, it's all created by an artificial economy. There are many, many points. That's enough for now. Did I cover? I was going to go through, but... Can Varnashram Dharma-based communities be established in our present modern society? The answer is yes and no. People say it's not possible to have Varnashram communities in the modern age. Yes, it is possible. Can it be established in our present modern society? No. It has to be established to the side of, separately from, not exactly in. It's the biggest revolution. People have no idea how great Prabhupada's idea, his revolutionary ideas, how revolutionary. That it's not capitalism or communism or fascism, they're all based on the same principle of how to, they're all based on the principle of how to organize society for forgetting Krishna, for sense gratification. Prabhupada's, and then how, what is it, the utilitarian principle, the greatest happiness for the greatest number of people. That should be the principle of organizing society. Jeremy Bentham, English economist. Utilitarianism. So their idea of happiness is that everyone should have the opportunity to earn as much money as possible and have as much freedom as possible to indulge their senses. This is American society. It's based on this principle. And there should be more and more facilities for sense enjoyment. Prabhupada gave the idea that no, society should be based on, we don't need your money, we don't need your TVs, we don't need your electricity, we don't want any of these things. We just want to live simply and chant Hare Krishna. It's the biggest revolution. No money, no sense, no artificial life. We don't need all the things that people think they need. We don't need electricity. People can't imagine how to live without electricity. People live for hundreds of thousands of years. You may think, well, it was so primitive and difficult. But to get that electricity, you have to go and do some ugra karmic job, and you have to, have big pylons all over the place and big powerhouses and dig up coal and make big furnaces and pollute the atmosphere, and then you have to go to a job to get some money to pay for the electricity. It seems like it's convenient, but ultimately it's not. To have the convenience of walking into the room and flicking on the switch to get a light, you have to go to so much trouble. But we don't see that. So Prabhupada had the greatest revolutionary plans. Alright, so anything else? Yeah. Please speak into the mic.
That's about the external thing like Varnashrama and rule and regulation for Vachanavada place, we heard that by following the devotional service, by performing devotional service, all good qualities will appear in that person. So, can you explain a little bit?
All good qualities develop in a person, but Do you think that means that they don't, because of that, they don't follow Varnashram principles? One of the good qualities is they do follow. What makes you think that having good qualities means they don't follow the Varnashram principles? I don't understand. What is the insinuation? That you don't need to follow Varnashram principles. Just by following bhakti you'll be good. So you don't need to follow Varnashram. Varnashram is for social organization and for regulating personal lives, for interaction with others, and so that everyone can play their social role. Everyone has a social role. And there many of the rules are for health and hygiene. It's just common sense, just like brushing your teeth. It's for health and hygiene. Everyone should do it. That one should be a brahmachari, grihastha, vanaprastha, and a sannyasi. And there are certain rules to be followed within the ashram. It's not that because you're a Vaishnav, that you're a Vaishnav, I'm a Vaishnav grihastha, therefore I don't have to follow any rules of grihastha ashram. That's not true. We're Vaishnavs, so we don't follow all these things. But why? I don't see that any of them. In fact, why is it said that Shudras should not study Shastra? Because the Shudras, they have less rules and regulations, they're less regulated. They're in a lower level of consciousness which is reflected in their not following the Vedic rules and regulations. That's why I say, if you're actually a Vaishnav, then you can go above the rule of the Varnashram, but it's not that in the name of being a Vaishnav, one acts below Varnashram principles. It's a very bad misunderstanding that devotees have, that if you're a devotee, you don't need any Varnashram. But you have to follow some cultural guidelines. So if you don't follow that given in Shastra, then you follow that given by Hollywood, Bollywood. That's what you end up following, because you have to follow something. Man is a social animal. So the social animal means there are social norms that we adhere to. If we don't follow those given by Krishna and the Acharyas and all the generations of followers of the Vedic culture, then we follow that of the animalistic society. And it's not just the whole way we think, our whole attitude to life, the way we... That's why I see it's in Britain, America, Germany, the countries where the modern way of thinking is very strong, the idea of everyone, all people are equal in all respects. There's no culture of respect. Of course, people, they may deal with others in a superficially polite way, but there's no... It's allowed to... You'll find daily in the newspaper, of course that's come in India now, they have cartoons lampooning the leader of the country. That can't be in the Vedic culture, that the head of the country is made fun of. That's another result of democracy. You put a clown as the prime minister and people treat him as a clown. So I find in these countries, just like we find here, that many of the students are coming from India, Eastern Europe. We have here one from Australia, one from Canada, one from Sweden, which is probably the most culturally degraded country in the world. Totally impersonal. The idea that, so, we don't find so many, the principle of Guru Bhakti is very difficult for people in these countries to accept. Very difficult. And these are the countries where Ritvikism, if it has, not so much in Germany, I don't, but definitely in England and America, that's where it's Protestantism. It's the same thing. There's the book, there's Jesus, the book, and me. There's no authority structure, there's no church. I just read, so it's like there's Prabhupada, I read his books, and that's it. I don't need anything else. Because they have no culture. Yeah. Please. Another thing, there are so many things, I've said many of these things many times, so. But I say our movement is concerned more with education nowadays, but I'm afraid that even though we're teaching Prabhupada's books, but if we're teaching it through the mindset and the systems and being enamored by modern education, then it's not going to come through the same way. Instead of studying modern educational systems, why don't we study Vedic educational systems? Why are we so enamored by, you know, all this PhD, MSc nonsense? In Vedic education, you don't get a certificate when you leave. Your certificate is your yajna pavitra. That's it. That's it. You have this. That means you don't just take it, but that means you take and you study. Acharya Vam Purusho Veda. The fact that you've studied with an acharya, that you've been accepted by an acharya, and that you spend time with him and you studied with him, that in itself is your certificate, and your character is your certificate. You don't need any piece of paper.
In 1974, Srila Prabhupada gave extensive talks with his disciples in Vrindavan, known as Varnashram talks, and he was talking extensively in details about establishing Varnashram colleges. And I was studying those conversations and found interesting. I just want to ask you about how to combine these two statements of Prabhupada together. On the one hand, he was literally imploring his disciples to show a proper example to people as far as Varnashram Dharma, teaching them, even inviting people who are not devotees to study and learn how to become proper human beings in different categories, Kshatriyas, Vaishyas, etc. But then on the other hand, he would also as repeatedly tell them, remind them not to consider Vaishnavas to be belonging to any of those categories, not even Brahmanas. So in other words, he said, never think Vaishnavas to be Brahmanas, never think yourself to be Brahmanas, Kshatriyas, Vaishyas. Just step down and teach people how to behave properly,
Yeah. Categories,
and then step up again. So how do we, in a practical way, combine these two things in our
Well, a devotee, as Prabhupada said, that a devotee may act as a brahmana, kshatriya, vaishya to teach others. But it's just like the teacher teaches A, B, C. But he knows that my identity is Gopi Bharata, Padakamaya, Dasa, Dasa, Dasa. He doesn't identify with the body, but for the sake of showing people how to live, they may take that wrong. That's all. And it's pretty, I mean, Prabhupada said this again and again, and devotees were asking again and again, and it seemed to be Prabhupada seemed to be wondering why the devotees couldn't catch this simple point.
Must have the purpose because, as you have very nicely described the nature of heaven on the one side, still and clear in terms of Varnashramana, saying it's all for external people and we're just the bhakti. But on the other hand, we also have people in Russia who tried hard to establish Varnashramana. They understood it by imposing those designations on devotees based on their maybe some predispositions towards a particular kind of activity, and they started classifying people in.
Where was that?
Systematic attempt was made in Perm, not at 60 Perm.
Yeah, but where? In the temple?
Yeah. And then also around the community, around the temple community. And some individual attempts are being made in Moscow and had extensive debates with some people who are trying to just classify everyone.
But I don't think, how are you going to do it unless you have your own community?
That's one of the points, yeah.
How can you do it if someone's, you know, working as a truck driver or something and then. You have to have your own community.
Well, they say, for instance, I don't know if you want me to give an example of their argumentation, to take us to this particular gathering, but for instance, they say, look at the temple president, he's supposed to be kshatriya, and kshatriya's going to get, like, remuneration for their services, assistance, whatever, he has to collect taxes or do some work, otherwise he is not fit to be temple president, he has to be Brahmin for the nation, even if he's a temple man.
He's everything. He's Kshatriya, Brahmana, Vaishya, Shudra, whatever is needed. Teaches the class, he's a Brahmana. Worships the deity, he's a Brahmana. Kshatriya, he had ministry. And then Vaishya, he may also have to do the fundraising. If no one else is there, he'll take out the garbage also. So he's... One thing, it's not that... One can be an administrator and a Brahmana also. For administrating the mud, Brahmanas do that. Not kshatriyas. There's an administration. Kshatriya administration means on the executive level, but even within each family, the woman is the, she administers the home. There's some kind of management system. So wherever, there are subsystems of management. So the mud is managed by Brahmanas. Among the Vaishya community, you find Nanda Maharaj. He wasn't a Kshatriya. He was a Vaishya. But he was directing a section of society. So it requires a lot of study. Prayer. And understanding. Vidya Purna Maharaj, he's done a lot of study of Vedic education and Varnashram. So why don't we learn from him? Once in Mayapur, one devotee connected with MIHE asked me if I had like any advice. I said, why are you asking me? Why don't you go over there? Ask Vidya Purna Maharaj. He studied so much, all these things. Oh, one thing I said to him also, that now there are certain controversial points within Prabhupada's books. And unless we are prepared to tackle these and give a siddhanta on them, that's what I said to them, by what they do, they in the MIHE, so I'm told, and I said to this devotee who asked me, by discussing it among all the different students and without giving any siddhanta because you want to avoid controversy, then you're actually introducing relativism, that any opinion is as good as any other. And you're actually, in the name of teaching Prabhupada's books, you're introducing Mayavada. Because this is a difficult point, we don't understand it, your opinion is as good as mine, and then why then What's the value of why study Prabhupada's books at all? What's the Siddhanta? We should understand. But many of the things Prabhupada stated are socially what is called not politically correct. So, these are some of the dangers of not going in with the attitude of sarvam etatritam manye yamam vadasi keshava. Unless we are prepared to accept guru mukha padma vakya chitete kriya, like harmonist. But things that amazing. Instead, when we read things or come across things in Shastra or in Guru Vani that we don't understand or we find difficult to accept, instead of just trying to pretend it doesn't exist or say, well, let's explain it away by saying, well, that's some time period. That was for 1975, and now everyone in history in the Vedic tradition up to 1975 understood it in this way, but now the world has changed since that time, and so that was time, place and circumstance, so it's all different. Instead of trying to explain it away, we should try to understand it as the acharyas present it to us, not as we think they should present it to us. Then we're not fit to be a disciple. If we don't understand, then we should inquire and try to understand. The great example is there in Bhagavad Gita, where Krishna is explaining, I heard all this, I spoke this to Vivaswan, and then this knowledge came down through Parampara, and then Arjuna interrupts and said, hey, wait a minute, what's going on here? That you're just the same age as me, then how... How did you speak to Vivaswan? Years, you know, Vivaswan, and then he spoke to Ikshvaku, and then Manu, and then how is that possible? This was a long time ago. How is that possible? He didn't say, hey, you're a crackpot. What are you talking about? This is nonsense. This doesn't make any sense. How would you respond? You're just talking rubbish. No, he said, Katame tad vijaniya, how am I to understand this? He understood that it seemed impossible to him, but he understood that Krishna is on a higher platform of knowledge. Krishna understands things that I don't understand. So what seems to me impossible, I'm going to ask Krishna to explain it to me. And Krishna did. He explained that, I already explained that we all have many births, but I remember and you don't, and then the whole thing, Ajopi Sanavaya, he explains. So instead of thinking that, well, Prabhupada made this mistake, or Shastra, this doesn't apply, Varnashram doesn't apply, although Prabhupada clearly said that we should introduce this, and we should find out the ways and means to apply it, rather than writing it up. There's another theory which is actually accepted by the GBC, although it's rubbish, sorry to say. We shouldn't criticize the GBC, we should follow authority, but in this respect, they made a big mistake by saying that there was a women's ministry paper in which they said that there's Asura Varnashram, and then there's Daivi Varnashram, and Prabhupada introduced a new kind of Varnashram. That's what they said. And according to them, all the old rules of Varnashram don't apply anymore. So, sorry, it's rubbish. It's because Prabhupada in the beginning didn't insist on all the rules of Varnashram. The men and women used to all mix up because they were hippies, and Prabhupada didn't try to convert them from being not hippies. And immediately. But then as Prabhupada saw that his disciples, they were not Prabhupada is giving them the highest principles of Krishna consciousness. We saw that many of them couldn't even follow the basic rules of human life. Then he wanted to introduce Varnashram. And then gradually there were things introduced like men and women stand in different parts of the temple, and brahmacharis don't mix up with women. And there are some rules are introduced, but that was interpreted by some that this was actually Prabhupada didn't introduce all these things. It was introduced by some of his nasty sannyasis. And actually Prabhupada wanted that we have a new system of varnashram in which the men and women all mix up like cats and dogs, like they do in American society, and that's Prabhupada's varnashram. And the GBC accepted this paper, the principles of this paper, and anyway, it's a long history. A new kind of varnashram. Prabhupada introduced it. It's a speculation. Yeah. Very serious mistakes are being made.
I have a question regarding this point that you just made. I know there's statements in Prabhupada, I remember one statement, I think it's in Sanskrit, the whole this whole modern civilization is chaotic because of the unrestricted mixture of man and woman.
He made statements like that, yeah.
But in the first canto,
in one famous interview, there was a feminist TV reporter, and then at the end, Prabhupada was saying that women are less intelligent than men. They should be submissive to their husbands. And then she said sarcastically that, so according to you, all the problems in society are caused because women are not submissive to men. Prabhupada said, yes. Heavy statement. The modern mythology is that men and women should mix freely and they're all the same. Women, the whole history of the human civilization is one of suppression of women. So, well, in one sense it's true. It is a history of suppression of women. Because unless women are protected and controlled, then there's chaos in society. And that's true of the present time. Another thing is, that if women have been exploited throughout history, it just shows how they're less intelligent. It proves the point, doesn't it? They only woke up to it now.
And yeah. I was going to bring another quote of Prabhupada that in the first canto, in chapter 18, when Parikshit counter chastises Kali, then Prabhupada gives some practical points that can be implemented.
There's no harm if there's co-education. Is that the one you wanted to bring up?
But if they're attracted, they should get married.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, you want me to comment on that? Well, I see that as an maybe some interim stage, because later Prabhupada said that he wanted the daughters of his disciples, they should learn, they should not go to school. Now, who's teaching that nowadays? You ever heard that? They don't teach that, but that's clearly what Prabhupada said. He said they should learn two things. How to cook very nicely, and how to be very chaste. These are two main things. And they can learn to read and write so they can read my books. That can be their education. And even for education, in his Gurukul, Prabhupada wanted the main thing they'll learn is how to be devotees. Prabhupada's books should be the curriculum. But Prabhupada, he wasn't... women's education, and also universal education. Prabhupada wasn't in favor of that. Now you may think that, well, then women don't get any education. They do. The Brahmana woman, what happens is, the Brahmachari, when he goes home and gets married, he's the guru of his wife. That doesn't mean he just bosses her around, but he has to actually teach her what he learned. What he learned, the essence of it, he has to teach to his wife. That's why a Brahmana woman will be also, they also know. Kapila Dev taught his mother. So it's not that they're uneducated, but they don't go to school. They get their education at home education. Now, many times when I say all these things, devotees think this is just Bhakti Vikas Swami's craziness or something like this. Just something I say. So I invite you, please look at Prabhupada's books. See his conversation, see what he says. Many devotees don't know the things that Prabhupada, you didn't know, you were raised in this country, you didn't know that Prabhupada said that the daughters of his disciples, they shouldn't go to school, they should be educated in the home. First time you've heard it, just see. These things are being suppressed. Well, there's a task. Who wants to find it? It must be in the conversations. Letters also. It's, I claim that it's not my craziness. If you want to blame anyone for being crazy, blame Prabhupada. If you can't blame him, then you get in trouble. There are many things. Even some things that Prabhupada said, we can't say them publicly, even among devotees, some things. Because if they're circulated, then it's too dangerous to circulate. Some of the things Prabhupada said. Now you're really wondering what kind of word this is. I'll leave you with the one about girls not being educated. That's enough to get our movement closed down probably in the Western world if we try to implement that. Yeah. You're going to, who's that? Oh, should we finish that? Yeah.
I have a small point here. One small point as you mentioned before. Regarding the crisis pythons.
Yeah.
In a sense, in order to solve this problem, because, don't use pythons. I remember one day, here in this group, there was a discussion, we couldn't use petrol and how will it be traveled. For example, all devotees are in the Western countries, they want to come to Vrindavan.
Yeah, alright, we can keep the planes for devotees to come to Vrindavan. Otherwise, there's no need. And it may be that, actually, if you say you're living in South America or whatever, you may not come to India. And you can make Vrindavan there. You can make the same atmosphere.
Just recently we were listening to a lecture of Prabhupada. Actually it was on 1, 5, 3, 6.
You remember very well, huh?
And Prabhupada was explaining
that. Well, that only gives me some vague idea. Then we talk about Narad.
Yes.
I don't know exactly.
It's the verse that one should, that activities in this world that are done for the activities in this world that are done for the satisfaction of the Lord is bhakti yoga.
Hmm. All right. Anyway,
and then Prabhupada explains that there's vedika and lokika karma, and both can be spiritualized. And then he said, explain like that, but from what I understood is that he said, he said agriculture, but then he started explaining how, he said agriculture, so I understood, okay, that's the traditional way of Lokika duties. You maintain yourself through agriculture.
But then, no, actually you don't maintain yourself through agriculture. Just see our way of thinking. It's performed as a duty. The Vaishya produces grains and protects the cows, keeps some for themselves and distributes to others. The Vaishya is the stomach of society. You're not working for yourself. The Vaishya, everyone works for his social role is to benefit others. Just see the consciousness embedded in our very way of speaking. Vaishya produces grains not only for himself, but for the whole society. And then they distribute and they pay taxes in grains and ghee. Nanda Maharaj, he took milk products to Kamsa. This way he was paying his taxes. Good citizen. So, and then that's used for yajna. It's all the cycle. Anadha bhavati bhutani parajanyanam sambhava. Yajna bhavati parajanya, yajna karma samudbhava. So everyone performs their swakarma. And then the Lord blesses, rains come, and then there's a cycle. So it's not that you're just working for a living, but everyone has an interacting social role, that everyone performs their dharma, and the result is offered to Vishnu, literally, in yajna. It's a whole completely different way of, completely different outlook.
So, thank you for clarifying, this is my
You don't work for a living. You don't work for a living. We perform our swakarma as a duty. And that automatically our living is supplied. You don't have to think how I'm going to survive. It's automatically there. It's a completely different way, completely different outlook.
And then went on to explain that now this Lokika duty is, in my visualization, is industry, factories, and said, so this is good, this is very good, we don't ask you to stop, just do it for Krishna.
Sometimes it's said like that, yeah. And there's one book, what's that called? That's called Karma Yoga. One of Prabhupada's earlier writings, he was saying how we can spiritualize the factories. No, not the sort of knowledge. It's published as a small book. I just can't remember the title now. It's not been very widely circulated. So Prabhupada was doing this at one point. He was suggesting that go into the factory, distribute prasad, and then they should have kirtan in the factories. Yeah. But that's, again, I see this as an interim measure, because Prabhupada said ultimately there's no need for factories. Factories are dungeons for demons, Prabhupada. Ugra karma. So there may be some interim level also. Or maybe both things will go on side by side. Those who live, they'll live simply, and others who are addicted to the modern way of life, they can do that and chant Hare Krishna also.
I have a doubt because when we talk about Varashram, we usually just talk about farms. Like, there's also Varashram cities in Mathura and Singapore.
Yeah, there are cities also, but it's an agricultural based society. There are cities, yeah. And with the cities, it's just like we have in the old European culture, what are called market towns, in which the people from the village come and bring produce, and they can purchase things, which purchase means they'll be by barter or by gold or cowries or something. Things which are not producible in the villages. And city also, like Prabhupada is saying, from Mayapur city, maximum population 50,000. So these, when we think of city nowadays, we think of how many millions, but not more than 50,000. They serve, they interact with the village economically. Was he promoting that? Not that I know of.
No.
He didn't say there couldn't be. Naturally, if there's agricultural based society, there will be towns also. But for those who are in town life, the thought of living on the land seems to be the most frightening thing. It is difficult in some ways physically, but it's much easier mentally. When you're no longer, if you're away from the modern, all the stress and the of modern life and the